Management or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Welcome, everyone, and we're back for another episode of Greenwich Streets. I'm Russell Pruner. Along with me is my usual co-host, my brother Mark Pruner. We're both realtors here in Greenwich at Compass Real Estate. You know, we're really here to talk about all the great things that Greenwich has to offer, you know, sort of in our hometown and a little bit about the world of real estate. Mark, how did your weekend go? We were sort of busy with lots of showings and so, open houses.
Our associate, Tim Agro, and I put on 320 Cogniwog, which is a 1947 house, but there are four bedrooms, 3,800 square feet on 2 acres. It's at the southern end of the 2-acre zone, so it's only 5 minutes or so to the Post Road, and had 12 groups show up, probably about 30 people. And it was interesting. There were about two-thirds of them were people, young folks from who live in Greenwich, either have moved out here because of COVID or in three of the cases were had grown up here. And then we had a couple of downsizers, an investor, a builder. So a little bit of everybody is out there looking right now. And how about you? You had an even more interesting weekend. We do our showings at about 20, 30-minute intervals. I understand on your house you take an hour to show it.
Yeah, I mean, we just listed a house out on Dubling Road that was on 2.5 acres for a little, just under $11 million. And, you know, in 4 days we had, I think we're up to 16 showings, which has been amazing for that price level up there. You know, as we get into those price levels, there really isn't a tremendous amount of competition given this house location and conditions in and all of that. It's got, as I tell everybody, two of everything. It's got two houses on the property. You know, it's got two garages. It's
with
got everything.
Nine cars. If anybody is a car collector, this is the ultimate house for them. And for you, in fact, you put in some lifts, you could have a 12-car garage.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, a little under 11,000 square feet of finished living space in two structures, an amazing pool house, as well as the main house, which is six bedrooms and nine baths.
Who's out there in the market for an $11 million house?
You know, I think it's interesting, Mark. There's really two groups of people. One, young couples coming out of New York, dual incomes with young children. A lot of them, you know, are waiting to hear from the private schools about whether they get in or not. Then you've got a whole nother group of people that have been in backcountry or a little bit further out that want to get closer to town but still want to have the feel of backcountry. And this house has that. Being 2.5 acres in a 1-acre zone, I mean, it's hard to say, but, you know, the floor to area ratio on this house is over 14,000 square feet. You know, it's got 11,000. So it's one of the few houses I've ever, you know, worked with and listed where I can say you've got more square footage available to you if you want to build on it.
Than you would in the 4 acres.
But you don't really need it. I mean, he just redid the whole lower level with a media room and, you know, a two-room gym that I've never seen before. You know, it's got a wine room, and then you've got a playroom, you know, two full baths in the lower level. So it's really amazing.
Awesome office up on the third floor that overlooks the property, and then it backs up to a conservation area.
Yeah.
So even though you're only maybe a 5-minute walk from Greenwich Country Club, you have as much privacy as you might have in backcountry.
Yeah, and again, due to the fact of lack of you know, number of houses on the market, I mean, this is very attractive. We're having our moment, I would say, right now, and then, you know, after that, we've probably got 2 or 3 weeks, but we'll see other things come.
Yeah.
On
so
the
let's
market.
Talk briefly about what is out there on the market in the over $10 million range. We have 23 listings, but that's and that's actually up 3 from last year. But the rest of our inventory is down 10% from last year, which was a ridiculously low level back then. We should have about 450 listings on the market. As of this morning, we had 138. So And, you know, and normally this is also the low time of the year for our inventory. The nice thing is, and I attribute this to Russ encouraging people to list their house. It looks like 14 people took you up on that offer and actually went out and listed their house. So we're starting to see a turn up here at the end of January with people deciding that there's so little out there, it's a good time to put their house on the market.
Yeah, I think the hard thing that people don't realize in Greenwich is that, you know, the spring market is not spring. Spring market is wintertime.
Yeah, it's a misnomer. They should call it the late winter market.
I know, exactly. So, you know, really now with Super Bowl Sunday coming up, that's usually the mark of the market starting to go. Bad news for Super Bowl Sunday, it's also the time when the Greenwich Public Schools are out. Then the week after that, you've got all New York schools and the rest of Connecticut out. So it's sort of a fit and, you know, start and fit here. Sort of, you know, as you get going forward, you slow down again. You've got the private schools out later on. But I will tell you this. The only reason that your house, if it's listed on this market right now, it doesn't reflect the value of the condition that it's in and the location it's in. There, we should have zero homes on the market right now. But we've got a lot of people that said, you know what, I'll throw it out there. They throw it out at a stupid number. And guess what? They don't get anything.
Not all of them are stupid numbers. Some of
they
them
are
our clients. Our clients haven't been on that long. But no, when you look at the inventory out there, 75 days seems to be kind of a point where you shift from our current market. And of the 140 listings we had as of January 31st, 90 of those have been on for more than 75 days, and those are the houses you're talking about. We do have a fair number of houses that have come on more recently, but many of them, like your house at Pond Place, it came on the second week of January, and it was under contract by the end of January, the third week, so it never got into our monthly inventory numbers. So it's not quite as bad as it looks, but right now, the line between buyers and sellers is usually 6 months of supply. We have under 6 months of supply all the way up to $10 million.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know what to tell you. It's one of these situations where I know one thing after doing this for 37 years is that you can't underprice a house in Greenwich. And right now, the best thing to do if you're putting your house on the market is undervalue it or value it at where a number that you're willing to take if somebody pays you full price. Because if you get too aggressive in your pricing, the people are so anesthetized to having to pay full price or a little bit over that they're not going to make you an offer until you come to back to reality on your value. And when you do that, the houses that are on the market, it's not a $50,000 price reduction. It's maybe a 5 to 10% price reduction to try to show people that you're really interested.
I always tell my clients that, you know, if anytime you make a price reduction, you need to make it significant and you need to make it ideally the only price reduction. If you have to do a second price reduction, you're showing weakness in your negotiation. Whereas if you do a large price reduction, what you're showing is, look, I want to get this house sold. Come make me an offer now.
Right. And, you know, what the old relocation, you know, thing was, after 20, if you get 20 showings, and you haven't got an offer, you need to reduce the price. Well, guess what?
You're more generous. I only do 10 showings and start to talk about the clients.
So basically, in today's market, if we look at my house on Pond Place, I could have reduced it if we didn't get offers as quick as we did after the second day because we had 32 showings in 2 days.
Yeah, so, and you knew what the market was. You knew who the buyers were. You knew what they were looking for. You knew what the issues were.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think that, you know, that's it. The other thing that I would tell people, if you're going to list your house, try to get a professional realtor in there as well as possibly a stager to put it in the best situation. You did that with Cogniwog and, you know, had needed some work done. And through concierge at Compass, you were able to get some work done that might not have gotten done otherwise.
Yeah, Compass and some other agencies have a program whereby they will give you the money to fix up your house. And the And then, but they're going to want it back when closing comes along. But usually it's without interest or at a very low interest rate. Compass is no interest. And that can make a huge difference, because one of the things we wanted to do at CogniWog was to make the entryway much more inviting. So we waited for a warm day. We did some painting. We did some landscaping. We took we power washed it and poured in some new gravel for the driveway, and it looked nice and crisp as before. You know, it looked like it had been there for a while. So those sorts of things, and then professional staging on the inside is also a huge help. One of the things we regularly hear from homeowners, particularly older homeowners, is, you know, this is the way it should be. I've thought about this, and I like it. They're not the ones that are buying the house. It's a whole generation younger, or maybe even a generation and a half. And that's who the house need to be made to look good to.
Yeah, that's one thing. It's funny you say that, Mark, because now Rob and I are in the midst of trying to get rid of stuff we've owned for a long time. As you know, the bedroom set
You're not getting rid of that, are you?
Yeah, we're going to have to.
Oh, no.
My parents won the bedroom set that we have in our bedroom on the second show of Let's Make a Deal.
1962.
In 1961. And we're getting, you know, that's going away. But, you know, the other thing, too, which is incredibly sentimental for my wife, is we've got an incredible dining room set that was given to us by her parents. And, you know, there's no way it's going to fit in where we're going. So it's going to be a really hard thing to be able to, you know, let go of that and, you know, give it or sell it to somebody else just because of, you know, the years of...
You know, and that's another generational change is... antiques are now called brown furniture, and which I personally think is kind of disparaging. I like real wood, but yeah, that stuff isn't what is being used for most homes these days. The people who are buying want a much lighter palette, a much more modern feel. And so, by the way, if you like that stuff, now's a great time to get some, because there's a lot of it out there that's looking for places to go.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, I think what we're going to see is we're going to continue to see, you know, houses that are in probably very good condition, very well built, but are going to be a little bit dated from the standpoint of the fact that the people selling have been in their houses anywhere from 20 to 40 years, and, you know, they're not really wanting to greatly change.
In my wife's
what's
case,
there.
63 years. Yeah. By the way, nobody heard that last number.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I don't think Libby would like that too much. Yeah. But, no, it's going to be an interesting spring market. I think we're going to have plenty of demand for housing. I think the key thing is try to get somebody to really see the best way to do this. Price it to the market. Let the market then tell you what the price will be.
And we've been talking about sellers. On the buyer's side, you know, there are some buyers who have taken a step back. They're afraid there may be a recession. They're waiting for prices to come down. When inventory is a third of what it normally should be, and admittedly demand is down, but it is down nowhere near as much as the supply is. So when you have that supply-demand imbalance, prices have gone up the last 3 years, and I think they're going to continue to go up. They certainly went up in the first month of January. So for a buyer, you want to be ready, you want to be underwritten, pre-approved, and you want to be able to move quickly. And then you also want to be able to wait for the right thing to come along. It's just when it does come along, move quickly.
Exactly. We're going to come back in a moment and talk with some beautiful women from Rand Insurance. But we're going to take
very accomplished businesswomen.
Right. We're going to take a quick break here on Greenwich Seats and be back with more in a moment.
Rand Insurance has been part of the Greenwich community since 1938, and we're located next to the J House in Riverside. We've been helping successful individuals, families, and local businesses with their insurance needs for over 80 years. Contact the Rand experts for insurance for your home, cars, and business, as well as cyber insurance and coverage for your jewelry, wine collection, and vintage cars. Get in touch with us at 203-637-1006 or at randinsurance.com. Experience the Rand difference.
Everyone knows time is money, so don't wait weeks for the IRS to send out your tax refund.
Go to Jackson Hewitt instead for up to $3,500 with a no-interest, no-fee, tax-refund advance loan. With up to $3,500, you could bring home the bacon and bring it home today. Money now instead of later? That's worth its weight in gold. Don't wait weeks for your refund. Go to Jackson Hewitt today. For eligible clients, loans by Republic Bank and Trust Company, details at jacksonhewitt.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Greenwich Streets. I'm Russell Pruner. With me, as usual, is my brother, Mark Pruner. We've been talking a little bit about what's going on in the Greenwich real estate market and, you know, just some stories about what we're seeing out in the market, you know, right now. You know, one of the things we do every week is bring guests on that, you know, can give us some insight into, you know, ancillary businesses and other things that, you know, have to do with your home and office and all that. And with us today, we have Barbara Stevens and Meredith Bach from RAND Insurance. You know, Meredith, I'm going to turn it over to you, and if you could give us a little background about yourself and Barbara's background.
Sure. Well, glad to be here. Nice to see Bob at the panel again. I used to have a radio show a while back, and we'd have a lot of RAND guests on in the old good old days. Anyway, RAND Insurance is in Riverside next to the J House, and we do personal and business insurance. And we've been part of the Greenwich community for over 80 years. And I've brought with me the president of RAND Insurance, Barbara Stevens. Her career with the company has been since, can I say, Barb, 1982.
Sure.
I'm proud of it. She has been there and runs the ship there. She likes to say she's the chief bottle washer, I think, is part of it. She's a lifetime resident of Greenwich, and she and her family are the owners of the New York Empire, which is a professional ultimate disc team, and they're the reigning national champions.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I'll let Barb take it over, and she's going to talk about all kinds of good stuff that you guys might have some questions for her.
Yeah, Barbara, you know, one of the things, let's just go with a truly fundamental question. Why do people need insurance?
Well, that's insurance 101 is that insurance provides protection of your assets in the event of a claim that's covered by a contract. So, for example, if you have an auto accident and you're at fault, you will get paid for the damage to your car and as well as perhaps the damage to other person's car or bodily injury, et cetera. And the insurance company also provides defense costs in the event that you're sued due to an injury or property damage. So that's the basics for auto insurance.
Yeah. In the case of, you know, as you know, we deal a lot in real estate. You know, what are the fundamental, I guess, types of insurance that somebody would be taking out for a single family home or condominium?
So the most important thing is to make sure that you discuss what type of coverage you need, and we do some of our due diligence with the client, so we're aware of what the coverage would be for them, whether it's the value of the dwelling, the value of their contents, or their need for increased limits of liability. We also talk about, you know, what's not covered under a homeowner's policy or not covered properly, which would be like scheduled items, jewelry, furs, fine arts, etc., so that we can make sure that the client is protecting themselves as best as they can against a claim that's covered by the policy.
Yeah, in the case of that, do you guys, I know, I mean, the basic insurance that you would have, but do you also bundle the insurance not only just with the home, but also with auto and other things?
So the best way to work with an agent is to provide them the information for all of the property or items that you have so that we can help determine how that should be done, whether it's through bundling, through an auto policy. Many of our clients have secondary residences, and many of our clients need flood insurance. So those are the kinds of things when we talk to someone and ask a lot of questions, we can better understand we can better understand what coverage they need.
So before we get too far into insurance, let's talk a little bit about your background. Meredith said you've been there since 1982, was it?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's amazing. What was it like when you got there, and what was your background to bring you there?
So interestingly enough, my background is in the fashion industry. I worked for Saks Fifth Avenue, but as I was trying to get back into the Greenwich market, and it was a sort of a downturn in the employment market. I started interviewing for jobs, local jobs, thinking that as soon as the market turned, I would be back into the city right. doing whatever I wanted to be doing. And I met with Sandy Rand, the owner of Rand Insurance at the time, and he told me I was overqualified, but I said, that's okay. I need a job and I need benefits because I have school to pay off. So I started working there as a receptionist. And then it wasn't very long before I started doing other things. And
so you really yep. have gone from the mail room to the president's office.
Oh, the filing room, I'd like to say. Not even the mail room. Yes, absolutely.
Barbara, did you grow up here? Or?
I grew up in Byram and still live in Byram.
Okay, cool.
Absolutely. Went to all the public schools.
As we have to in real estate, do you all also need to be licensed by the state of Connecticut?
Yes, you need to be licensed in property and casualty if that's the venue that you're going into, and you also need to do continuing education.
How much continuing ed does a real estate or
an insurance agent? So for property and casualty, you need to do about 24 hours every 2 years.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, that's more than we do.
COVID has allowed us to do it now online, which makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Let's look for a minute. I mean, one of the things that I've found that come up in a lot of insurance policies, I don't know if every insurance company does this, but when, let's say we have a catastrophic event on our house, case in point, it burns down. Is there full replacement costs that are associated with that, or how does that work?
Well, that would depend on what you choose to purchase when you purchase a policy. But at Rand Insurance, we don't sell any policies that don't carry guaranteed dwelling replacement value. So it could be normally houses are appraised depending on the value of the home. And then each year there's an inflation factor that goes up with it. And then every once in a while, the client might call us and say, I think I need to have this redone because I've redone my kitchen or which we should talk about for a little bit. We always tell people before you do any construction on your home, please call us. We have some advice that we'd like to give you. But, you know, definitely we only sell replacement on contents as well as dwelling.
Okay. In the case of, if you are doing a kitchen or something like that, have you guys ever consulted on making sure that the contractors have the proper insurance to basically if something goes wrong?
I like that question. It's one of my favorites, actually. Certificates of insurance should be received by anybody who's coming into your house to do any kind of work, even if it is just the plumber, someone coming in to do a repair, your roofer. Make sure that you understand what the insurance certificate shows, and if you need help with that, please let us know. But making sure you work with approved and insured vendors is absolutely imperative.
Yeah, we have a couple of friends, and especially in real estate, where we deal with all the time where work is done on a property without permits and everything. And then you come to not only find out it wasn't done with permits by the town, but it was done by contractors that didn't have insurance.
Or weren't even licensed.
Yeah, which makes it extremely difficult. So, you know, it's very important that you do that. Let's talk a little bit more, coupled with a house. You've got cars. Are cars and houses normally the policies in one and the same or different?
We hope that they're one and the same, but there are some times when that's not possible. If someone's had any kind of accidents or tickets that wouldn't allow them to be in a standard market, we might have to go to an excess market for the auto. But the most important thing is not so much whether or not the car is covered for physical damage, but that you're covered for liability. And liability is the most important thing that we can sell to you. And when people say, how much do I need? We always say, we'll give you quotes on every level and you can determine which you would prefer to choose. Because the main benefit of an umbrella policy for liability limits is that the defense costs are covered. And if you have high enough limits and there's a big enough suit, you can almost hope and be sure that your assets won't be frozen in the event of a suit, which is one of the biggest concerns most of our clients would have, which is why we try and sell relatively high limits of liability. Much more important, well, I shouldn't say much more important, but as important, if not more important, than the actual property coverage that you have.
Let's talk about the young family moving in, what kind of insurance they might need, and then let's talk about, a successful financial executive who may live down in Belhaven in a large house.
They both need the same types of coverage. So it's just your homeowner's policy, your auto policy, your personal articles floater if you have any jewelry, and your liability limits. The difference is the amount of liability limit somebody is willing to pay. But neither one of them need low limits. We're almost positive about that.
We're in Greenwich. Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah, liability can be a big number.
That's correct. And the most people need flood insurance, whether they're in a flood zone or not, which is very hard for people to understand. But about in the last several years, most flood claims have not been covered by flood because they were not in flood zones.
Yeah.
So we quote flood insurance on every home that we insure, and then it's up to the client to decide what to do. So our job is to just advise them.
What kind of flooding is covered outside of the flood zone? Let's say we have a big rain and someone's basement is flooded or something like that.
If you have flood insurance, you're going to be covered for whatever limits you purchase. If you do not have flood insurance, there are exclusions under the homeowner's policy that are pretty painful.
Mm-hmm.
And it also depends on how the water gets in, whether it comes in because a sump pump might have not worked the way it probably should have been. But rising waters and flood are very, very expensive losses.
Right.
And everyone should have flood insurance.
Yeah, no, I had a client who... It was one of the hurricanes, and unfortunately they didn't have a generator, so their power went out, which meant their sump pump went off, which meant their finished basement flooded.
That's correct.
That
happens every time it rains hard, wind-driven rain, any kind of rising water, mechanical breakdowns, sump pumps, generators. You know, all of those things that you can do to help protect your house, central station alarms, water sensors.
Which ones are covered under the regular homeowner's policy, and which ones would the flood insurance policy pick up on?
So flood insurance picks up on rising waters. Homeowner's policies, you must read. Each specific carrier has a different definition of what they will and will not cover, and it definitely depends on whether you're in a flood zone or whether or not you have sump pumps and generators. So I'm not answering that question. It's impossible to answer.
You're pleading the fifth?
I am pleading the fifth.
Exactly.
It's just like my cousin Vinny.
But I think it's really important to know that the exposure exists and you need to talk to your agent about it.
Yeah, I had that exact problem, Barbara, in my basement during Sandy where I'd never had water. Basically, I walked down and, you know, it looked fine. I had stocking feet on, stepped on the carpet, and it was just so.
Swish.
And, you know, if I had had a generator that would have kept the sump pump running, we would have never had the problem. And what I do the day after Sandy, probably bought the last generator available in Greenwich, and it wasn't a bargain.
Generators and automatic water shutoffs. Water damage is far more expensive and difficult to treat than most other types of claims.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about auto insurance and young drivers, because I hear complaints from some of my clients about, you know, their daughter and their son are both driving, and all of a sudden their insurance rates went up. I can imagine what causes that, but yeah, what are the things to be prepared for as that's coming along? And also, what kind of changes do you need to make?
So when your child becomes licensed, call your agent and get them onto the policy. The rates are going to go up, and there's a lot of reasons for that. I think
Russ
what's
and I
real,
can both attest the reason we need an insurance.
I understand that. We hear about it every day in the office. There's almost no question that the rates, which are approved by the state, are approved for a reason. Young drivers, not all, but some, certainly do get into quite a few accidents. And what you want to make sure of is that you have the proper coverage and the higher liability limits. And I can't stress that enough. When you have teenage drivers, or when you're even your own self as a driver, you have to understand that very many drivers in the state of Connecticut do not have insurance at all. So in the event that you're hit by an uninsured motorist or they don't have enough insurance and there's injuries or damages to your own vehicle or your own persons, you know, your own insurance company will help settle those claims for you because there's nothing to go after for the other party, the offending party. So I don't know if I've said this once, but I might have said it 400 times. Watch your liability limits. That's the most important thing you can do to protect your family and your assets.
Barbara, let me ask you another question because we have this right now with my son who we have three cars. And basically we talked to the insurance people and they basically said your son is the one you're not insuring. It's the vehicle that's being insured. Is that correct?
I'm not quite sure what they might have meant by that, but the insurance does follow the vehicle. So if it is your car, it doesn't matter who's driving it. The claim will be paid under your insurance policy.
Okay.
So if you're getting ready for a party and your guest says, I'll run down and get the ice and gets in an accident, you're still covered if it's your car.
As long as you give permission to someone,
right.
They are covered and it's covered under your policy.
So
just
the guy
remember
who steals
it's
your car
covered.
Isn't covered?
Well, you're covered.
Right.
He's not. But that's one of the reasons why the liability limits are that much more important, because you're really exposing yourself when you let anyone drive a car. And you're also exposing yourself when you are a passenger in someone else's car. Just make sure no one gets into somebody else's car and say, by the way, is your premium paid in full?
Yeah.
And do you have the right liability limits?
If not, I'm not riding with you, right?
As the president of an insurance agency, have you ever asked that question?
No, but it was asked of me when I used to drive for school, for my children's nursery school.
Yeah.
But oddly enough, it was not asked of me when I drove for my children's public school. And so I always used to come in with my certificate of insurance, and they'd be like, oh, we don't need that. But but I have instilled some of these little pieces of wisdom to my own children. So they're pretty aware of liability limits.
Let me ask you a question. Can you give the listeners an idea of what an umbrella policy includes when you have homeowners insurance?
So an umbrella policy covers you for any underlying exposure you might have. So it covers you over your auto, boats, recreational vehicles, your properties, your secondary homes, tertiary. You know, we have some clients who might have four homes, five homes. So the umbrella policy is literally that. It covers over and above those liability policies that you have already in place.
Mm-hmm. One of the issues that's come up, because as I understand it, the traditional flood insurance that FEMA in the flood zones requires, or the banks require it if you're in a FEMA flood zone, basically covers your contents, and it's got a fairly low limit for Greenwich. How do you work with a umbrella policy for something like that?
So umbrella covers liability, not property. So the flood policy through FEMA, the maximum is $250,000 on the dwelling and $100,000 on the contents, which you are correct, is normally relatively low. There are excess flood policies. Most clients, when we offer them, will decline them because they believe that and just another thing is finished basements should always be discussed with your insurance agent because they're not always covered under even the FEMA flood policy. So that's just an aside. You should always discuss those things. So if somebody does want quotes, or we provide quotes for an excess policy for their contents in their dwelling, you can get it. It's just expensive.
Okay. And then let's talk about, so you all are an insurance agency as opposed to an insurance company.
Correct.
So you can write policies for a variety of companies, and how do you help people choose which ones?
So we do write for a variety of companies, and it's based on the client's exposures. So it might depend on what location they're in, how close they are to the water, whether wind is a factor, how many children they have, what their needs are from an umbrella standpoint. So when somebody comes in, we ask them a bunch of questions, and then we make some decisions as to which carriers, and then we provide them with quotes, and then they can make their decisions.
We're going to take a short break here on Greenwich Streets, and we'll be back with more in a moment.
Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in a capsule, changing the world one life at a time.
I'm in the medical field, and I think when you start out these things, you know, everything from the advertisement sounds so good that you're psyched up for it to work. It's working. Anyway, I'm happy.
Balance of Nature has made a big difference. It's just one of the greatest products, and it's just so simple, and it works.
Balance of Nature is a fantastic product. You could tell it's real. You could taste it. And it gives you really good energy, and it's just right up there with rent, electric cable, like things that you have to have. I'm not cutting Balance of Nature. No, I love it.
Start your journey to better health with Balance of Nature right now. Call 1-800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com for more information or to place your order. Shipping is always free. And don't forget to get 35% off your first order as a preferred customer by using discount code Laura.
We're back with Greenwich Streets. I'm Russell Pruner. With me is my brother Mark, and with us joining us today are Barbara Stevens, the president of Rand Insurance, and Meredith Bach, and talking a little bit about insurance and you know, the various types, and you want to make sure you got it.
Right.
What we're finding out. Yeah, exactly. You know, I would say, Barbara, what would be if somebody's renting and wants to go into any, whether it be an inexpensive rental that might be $2,000 a month all the way up to something that might be
$50,000
a month. I mean,
I know
is renter insurance
month.
Something that people, you know, are really wanting to buy, or is that more forced on them by the homeowner?
Or the the landlord.
Well, the landlord is correct in asking a tenant to have insurance. And once again, we'll talk about whether it's property portion of it, which is your contents, which is always important because in the event of a fire, for example, or a burglary, you do want to have coverage for your contents. But the real important thing is to remember that you need the liability insurance so that if you're, you know, somebody comes into your apartment and trips over something you left on the ground and they sue you, you'll have your liability insurance was the most important thing.
What are the normal amounts? I mean, we all the time, I mean, you're not that we're guessing, but, you know, on a rental that's $5,000 versus one that's $25,000, should the liability coverage change much?
No, the liability coverage really has nothing to do with the value of the rent or, you know, anything from a content standpoint even. The question on liability is what makes you sleep better at night and what do you feel in the event of a lawsuit you would like the insurance company, that's if it's covered, to partake in versus you. But most people totally underestimate what the contents value is of their home or their tenants or their rental.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what you could sell it for at a tag sale and you look at what it would cost you to replace it, and those two figures are night and day. One of the things we did was I went through and then actually photographed all the closets and drawers in our house just so that we have a record of what we have.
That is 100% important. These days it's so easy to do with an iPhone. You can video. People forget. I know that during a total loss, which there were a few during Sandy, Hurricane Sandy, people were surprised mostly about how much it cost to replace the items in their kitchens.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, and then let's talk. So the person comes in, rents for a year, and then finds the perfect piece of land to build a house on. What? Because you've got the purchase of the land, then you've got the actual construction of the property, and then you've got moving in and living there.
Correct.
So how does insurance kind of evolve through that phase?
Call us through the entire process.
Yeah.
You do need a builder's risk policy for when the construction is being done. Sometimes it's supplied through the contractor, and sometimes it's supplied through Rand Insurance. People make the assumption that once you buy insurance, everything is covered for everything, and that is not the case. Construction is one of those areas that you don't want to make a mistake on. So if you're thinking about even doing renovations, or certainly from the ground up, please give us a call.
Yeah. So what sort of things, you know, if I'm hiring a contractor, what kind of things and I do I want to look at, or do you want me to ask the contractor? And do you talk directly with the contractor or their insurance ever?
With permission from the client, we would definitely deal with the contractor directly. The most important things are they insured? Do you have proper permits? Is there an architect involved? What's the completed value, and how long do you think it's going to take?
Yeah. going back a second to the tenant insurance, are there standard levels that sort of insurance companies offer, whether it be, you know, 100,000, 200, 250, 500, or are they just arbitrary?
It's not that it's arbitrary. It would be a discussion with the client as to what they think they need, and then we would determine what carrier would be best for them.
And then let's talk about one of the things we've seen a lot of in COVID is people working from home. And, you know, and I've seen situations where there'll be one financial guy, he'll have two traders, and they'll have an assistant. They have separate rooms and deliveries and all sorts of stuff like that with, you know, non-household guests coming on the property. What sort of issues arise there?
Well, there could be quite a few issues that would arise from that. The best thing to do is call your agent, because it does depend on what the type of business is, whether or not you have employees working there, et cetera. You may need a commercial policy to protect yourself in that way, because there are exclusions under the homeowner's policy that may come into play in the event of an injury or loss of property.
Yeah. In the case of that, I mean, we're realtors, and you know, I had a personal insurance policy for a long time, but then because I had prior to COVID, which we don't have as much anymore, a commercial policy now, because we had people in our car that, you know, doing the job that we do, driving around. Do you see that still a lot, that you've got like people like realtors that have commercial policies?
We would suggest that they have a commercial policy, and we would be concerned if they did not. And it does depend on what type of activities they are doing. But that's something, again, you should call your insurance agent to talk about the specifics, because a lot of people don't understand the exclusions under their homeowner's policy or their liability policies.
And what are some of the major exclusions that people get surprised by or that you should know about?
Water damage and flooding is probably the first one. The second one would be the values of jewelry that's not scheduled to the maximum of whatever the policy might include.
Artwork, I would assume, goes along with jewelry?
Well, artwork, it's all covered. Artwork can be covered under your contents policy, but not to the same for the same exposures.
We've seen some beautiful artwork on the – I've been in one house that – you know, could have been a museum wing.
Please schedule it.
Yeah.
Please schedule it. You'll be disappointed if it's not scheduled.
Yeah, how about wine collections or just
so wine
baseball memorabilia
are,
collections?
All of it. We tell people whatever they're collecting, they need to discuss with us to be sure that there are not exclusions under the policy where they would be disappointed. The other thing is that, you know, current appraisals are really important for many of the carriers. And appraisals are sometimes expensive to get, but not having them is more expensive if you have a claim.
So you had mentioned that the carriers were on the replacement value policies have an automatic escalation clause, but we've seen some real changes in the price of houses here in the past 3 years, and they're not homogeneous over the whole town. Is there a time when you should get a new insurance appraiser? Our appraisal for your properties?
You can call us and we can discuss it with you. But the thing that's really causing some issues right now is still the supply chain and the lack of labor available. So everything is costing more to replace and taking much longer time. So on builder's risk policies where the intent might have been to be completed in a year, now they're going two and a half years just because they just cannot be completed.
Yeah. Going one step further, how often do you feel a homeowner or anybody should take to go back and review all their insurance with their insurance agent?
So I would say at minimum once a year, and then in the event that there's any kind of a lifestyle change or a change of marital status, et cetera. So Rand Insurance also sell personal insurance, commercial insurance, and we sell life, health, and disability policies. So what we try to do is, you know, try to really understand the client and understand their exposures and then give them options. We don't require them to purchase anything. We just want to make sure that they know what's available.
Yeah. So what are kind of the insurance issues that come up, you know, kind of over a lifetime? A baby is born. You get married, and then the baby's born, and then unfortunately you get divorced or someone passes away and goes into an estate situation. What kind of insurance considerations at, you know, in each one of those stages?
Well, life insurance is always a good idea to have, whether it's term insurance, which is not terribly costly, or, you know, other products that might be a little bit more expensive but have better value at the end. Medical insurance, of course, everybody has to pay some attention to medical insurance these days. What is definitely undersold and much needed is disability insurance, because the chances of a disability are much higher than a death. When somebody is in their years of making a financial difference for their family. So we discuss all of those things, and now there are products that combine some of those things as well as long-term care, which we all know is important these days.
Yeah. So if there's a homeowner's policy and the homeowner passes away and now you have their two sons as executors of the policy or executors of the estate, what kind of insurance do they need as executors, and is there coverage from the homeowner's policy that was in existence at the time of the owner passing away?
If you're asking from a legal standpoint whether or not they need any kind of a policy that covers them from to be an executor, right, that's one question that really would go to an attorney.
Right.
But as far as the homeowner's policy would probably just change the name insured to the estate of, and then we would make a determination with them whether the policy, whether the house is going to be vacant, mm-hmm, unoccupied, or just inhabited, and
right,
how. So all three of those would create a different scenario.
Yeah.
You brought up the disability policy and all of that. Do you find that people are pretty proactive or not proactive in the case of that, especially as they get older?
Unfortunately, people are not proactive when it comes to disability insurance, and many people believe they have enough of it through their work. But we always ask them to please verify that, or send us the policy, or send us the type of coverage, so that we can help them better understand what they're actually covered for.
And I understand long-term disability policies, some of them actually have time limits, so that if you, unfortunately, let's say you become a quadriplegic or something. So what kind of policies, you know, would protect you in that situation? Or another one that's very common, unfortunately, is Alzheimer's or dementia disabilities.
So one is disability insurance that would reimburse you for funds in the event that you became disabled that you would not be making if you were not working.
Right.
And then the other one is, how do you pay for long-term care? And that is a very good question. And in some ways, it's almost impossible to pay those bills. But if you have a long-term care policy and it's set up properly and someone explains to you what is covered, not covered, and what the time limit may or may not be, or there's usually a limit to, mm-hmm, what the insurance companies will pay out in total, not so much a time limit, but perhaps a financial limit. But all of those things, as with everything, it depends on what,
right,
you're willing to
Can
pay
for.
Can you
get an umbrella policy on a disability policy?
No.
Okay.
You know, one of the things I think, too, Barbara, is that we see so many things about insurance and stuff like that on TV. And I think what I'm learning here is the devil's in the details, is you really need to understand what your policy really covers for the amount you're paying, correct?
What we say to a client is, it is one of the larger budget items normally for someone personally. You should know exactly what you're paying for. And that is where we come into play, to help somebody understand what they're paying for and also to understand what's not covered, which is just as important as knowing what is covered.
Yeah. And then how about the claims process itself? So let's say you have a fire, mm-hmm, and you've got a part of the house actually burned down. Some of it is smoke damage, but some of it's okay. How do you and as you said, you know, you've got contents, you've got property damage. How does that process actually work? Who should they call first? And then how do you go through the process to ultimately get them back to where the place is rebuilt and they can live in it again?
And you get to do that under 5 minutes.
It's a long process. I can answer it very quickly. So the first thing is to call RAND Insurance. We are open 24/7 for claims calls. Then we would call the carrier that you're insured through, and then we would start to help you with the cleanup process, and we would refer people to do the cleanup. Then the appraiser from the insurance carrier will come out and start to see what is going on. And then you will be asked to provide information, whether it's pictures, invoices, et cetera, to try and get things back to normal. And during that period of time, they will pay, if you're no longer able to stay in the house, they'll pay for you to be moved to another home and pay the additional costs, living expenses.
Yeah, I had a client like that. And the insurance company was amazingly good about helping us find, well, they suggested a couple places which didn't work. We found them a place, and they just moved in literally 2 days later.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, Barbara, given that people have become a lot more transient because of COVID and all of that, how does that affect insurance? I know on a property, if you sell it, it's no longer there, but how about their personal insurance? Is that pretty much... you can go anywhere in the world or the United States and still have the same coverage?
No. Once you move, you have to let us know can change the mailing addresses or location addresses. The insurance company has the right to then underwrite it based on the new circumstances, et cetera. So it's not really transferable. Yeah. It's easily moved, but it's not automatically transferable.
What about car rental insurance? Because they'll hit you up for $10 a day, but I've seen policies that say that, you know, we've got you covered if you rent a car. Is that something that you should take or check your policy, or how do you determine what you should do when you're at the rental counter?
So the basic rule of thumb is to call us. But the second rule of thumb is domestic versus international, two totally different sets of rules. So the insurance carriers that we write with will cover you for liability many times. Domestically, it gets a little more confusing when it's international. So you do have to let us know, and then we can help advise you. And there's also some coverage under certain credit cards. Mm-hmm. So peace of mind for international travel, even though there is coverage perhaps under your policy for liability, is if it's a foreign country, you might want to take the coverage in that area.
Okay.
It's up to you.
That's wild. What question should we ask you that we didn't ask you?
I don't think there's any questions that you haven't asked me.
I'm amazed at the knowledge and breadth of insurance policies and liabilities and issues that you deal with on a regular basis.
All day long.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there any really unusual insurance that you guys, work on? Is it a pet insurance or something like that?
It's not so much unusual.
Yeah.
There normally is coverage for anything that you can think of, but a couple of things that you should pay attention to is cyber liability, personally and professionally. Pet insurance, we do not sell, but we recommend it to others. And we have other items like travel insurance has become very popular because travel is so expensive and because many times travel is being canceled. So they should definitely call on travel insurance.
By the way, one thing, if you're thinking about moving to Florida that Barbara had mentioned and we didn't get a chance to talk to this time, but we will next time, is some areas that you go to, you can't get insurance because the hurricanes have hit them so many times that you just can't get policies there.
Call us before you put money down on any home.
Yeah, there you go. We can't thank you enough, both Barbara, you and Meredith, for coming on. And we appreciate our listeners. Again, you can go to our podcast at GreenwichStreets.com to hear past versions of it. And we thank you for listening in.
Thanks
Have
for
a
having
great
us.
Day.
Yeah.
This is your community radio station serving lower fare.